Hey, this is Pastor Ricky Ortiz at MetaChurch, and I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you for tuning into our podcast and supporting our ministry. If you'd like to learn more about MetaChurch, you can visit us online at meta.church, and we're praying this message inspires you and encourages you to pursue your relationship with Jesus.
I've got to tell you, I hate wasting time. I don't know about any of you. I don't know what your reality is. I don't know if you like wasting time, but I hate it. And hate's a strong word, but I mean it. Like, hate is the word that I use when I think about wasting time. And we'll get to this With You series in just a second, but I thought I needed to start with wasting time because there's something about it that just frustrates me and irks me more than just about anything else. Like, in the morning I wake up, I have my routine, I have my way that I want to go about things, I have things that I want to do, and I feel like any kind of distraction or thing that gets in the way or something that just seems like it's just sitting idle, it really just frustrates me. And I think most of us, if you would think back on your experience here in the city, if you think back of your life and over the course of what's got you to here, I don't know that I've ever met anyone who says, yes, I enjoy wasting time. Have you? No, okay, I didn't think so. But I think in New York, I feel like that feeling is even more accentuated, right? Like, I feel like everyone thinks that they have to do something so significant or so important. And maybe they do, but here everything is so urgent and so pressing. It's like the light switches green and then all of a sudden people are like laying on the horn and moving because they want people to move forward. They don't feel like they want to sit around and waste time. I remember a few years ago, I was getting off of work and I was, you know, wanting to come home. And it was like one of those monthly kind of MTA disasters, which, you know, like, I mean, they happen more than monthly, but like, I'm talking about one of the big ones where everything is just shot. Like, nothing is working and nothing is set. And so I was coming from Midtown and I wanted to get from, you know, like Grand Central Terminal to up here 86th Street. And so I was going to take a 4 or 5 train or whatever and come down. So I walked down to Grand Central and you come down the stairs to go down onto the platform and you can just see hordes of people, like crowded, just packed to the max, and everyone's down there. And so you go, like, you know, you force your way down onto the platform. And then when I looked to the left, there was a 4 train and to the right, a 6 train, both of them with their doors wide open and just completely packed with people and just like stuff, right? And then, you know, how you have the people who are just still trying to get in, even though there's no space. And then the signs, you look to the signs like, okay, what's the issue here? And then it has like the next 2 trains and it just says delayed. And that's it. It doesn't have a time. It doesn't say they're going to be coming. It doesn't say anything. It doesn't give you any hope that you're going to be able to make progress or go home. And so I'm just sitting there. I sat there for a few minutes or stood there, I should say, for a few minutes and trying to figure out like, what should I do? And I was like, all right, this is ridiculous. I'm just going to walk over to 3rd Avenue and take the bus. Cause I was like, you know, that's going to be faster than this, or at least I won't feel like I'm wasting time. And so I walk over to 3rd Avenue. And guys, I'm not kidding you. To this day, I've never seen anything like this. There were literally over 100 people standing at the 42nd Street and 3rd Avenue bus stop for like the 101, the 102, and the 103, like just packed. Okay, so I wasn't the only person that thought I should take a bus home. Hundreds of other people thought the same thing. And so we go there and, you know, I'm standing there and you're just waiting for a bus because you don't know when these buses are going to come. And literally, I'm telling you, I'm no exaggeration. I've never seen anything like this. We see a bus at the light coming. And the bus comes, but it doesn't stop. It just keeps going. It is so packed with people. And apparently nobody wanted to get off at 42nd Street. And so the bus driver just kept going. And then a second bus did the same thing minutes later. And then a third bus. By the third bus, I was like, this is absurd. Like the platform, or not the platform, but the sidewalk is just, you know, jam-packed with people. No buses are coming. Like there's something is totally, you know, like wretched in this thing. So I walked over to 1st Avenue to where the UN building is. I was like, I'm going to take a bus here. And over there, there was like probably like 50 or 75 people waiting for a bus. I finally get on a bus, make it uptown, get home. Okay. And it took me an hour and a half to get home. Now, I don't know if you've ever walked like 40 blocks in New York, 42nd Street to 86th Street. You know, that's what, like 46 blocks, 44 blocks. That should take you about 45 to 50 minutes. It took me twice as long to get home after a late night at work. And I was so frustrated because all I wanted to do was just get home. I just felt like I wasted time getting home. And I was so aggravated, but the reason I share that is because I think there are some of you who have felt that way, maybe in the MTA, but more significantly in a work situation, more significantly in a relationship, more significantly in a pursuit of a career where you feel like you've been at something for a long period of time. And then at the end, you're just kind of left wondering, did I just waste all my time in that? You know, it's a relationship that you've been committed to, a friend or a family member, or maybe it's a romantic relationship where you dated for a couple years and you've poured everything you have into this relationship and you've given your best and you thought like, okay, well, maybe if I just keep at it, things will get better. And then afterwards, it just crumbles and it falls apart and you can't help but wonder like, was that just whole thing a waste? Like, did I just lose 2 or 3 years of my life that I'm never going to get back with that person because nothing seemed to fix their problem? Nothing seemed to fix our relationship. Nothing seemed to make any sort of improvement or change the outcome or the circumstances that I've been in. Or maybe for you, it wasn't a relationship. Maybe for you, it was a career where you pursued something, an art or something that you thought, this was my dream as a child, and I'm going to go after this thing. I'm going to go for it. And you've dedicated your life to it. And you've done the best that you could to pursue it, to find opportunities, to make connections. And you do all of this effort. You put all of this time into it. And yet you find that you're still working at like a coffee shop. And you find like, what is my life? I've got 7 roommates in a 2-bedroom apartment. Like, this isn't the way this is supposed to be. Or maybe it was, you know, some sort of work situation where you had this person or this employer or whatever. And you had to be there because you needed the money. And you had to be there because this was your job. But that person, you just created such a conflict. And they made your life miserable. And they made your situation miserable. And no matter how nice you were, no matter how kind you were, no matter how well you did at your job, no matter how good you performed, nothing ever satisfied that person. Nothing ever made it where it was like good enough or it was okay. Or it was like, wow, thank God I did that. And you just waste the time. You just waste it away. Has anyone ever felt like that in any situation in your life? Raise your hand. Okay, good. Several of you. And you know what makes that worse? It's compounded by when someone from the outside looking in says, you like suggest that you do something that you've been doing for like 2 years. Well, you know, you should pray for them. Like, I've been praying that God removes them from this job for like 3 years. I've been praying for them. Like, oh, you should be kind. You know, you should be nice. And so I've been kind. I've been nice. It doesn't change anything. Or you should be so, you know, maybe a little less selfish or self-centered and just sacrifice and serve them and love them and care for them. And you're like, I've been doing all of these things. And listen, let me tell you, nothing changes. Nothing gets better. Like that just, you know, I hate wasting time, but then I hate that just as much when someone wants to come in and quote, speak into your life and they speak what you've already been doing. Now, if you've ever felt that way, I've got good news because you're not alone. In fact, in Luke chapter 5, where we'll be today, Jesus' disciples felt this same way. And I call them Jesus' disciples because that's how we know them today. But at the time that Luke chapter 5 takes place, they were not yet Jesus' disciples. They knew Jesus. They were around Jesus. But they weren't yet with Jesus. And where we pick up in Luke chapter 5 is kind of a fascinating story that I think really illustrates this whole idea or this whole feeling of wasting time and the frustration that it creates or that it produces in our lives. And so it says this, verse 1. One day, as Jesus was preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, great crowds pressed in on him to listen to the word of God. He noticed 2 empty boats at the water's edge, for the fishermen had left them and were washing their nets. Verse 3, stepping into one of the boats, Jesus asked Simon, its owner, to push it out into the water. So he sat in the boat and taught the crowds from there. Now pause for a second, because this isn't really part of my message. But how do you read this and think like, this man just got in a stranger's boat and says, hey, buddy, I'm taking your boat. Go ahead and push me out because I got to do some teaching over here. It's like, who does that? What kind of man gets in another man's boat and says, hey, push me out into the water because I got business to take care of? That's what Jesus did. And so verse 4 continues on and says this. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, now go out where it is deeper and let down your nets to catch some fish. Verse 5, Simon replied, Master, we worked hard all last night and didn't catch a thing. But if you say so, I'll let the nets down again. Now here is the frustration, right? Jesus was that guy who was telling them to do what they had already been doing. Jesus steps in, hey, I'm going to take your boat for a minute. I'm going to use your boat. And then after I'm done using your boat, I'm going to tell you, hey, you need to go do what you were already doing all night long. Now, this, you know, is kind of annoying and maybe it's like bothersome or kind of a pest to Peter and his guys, his buddies, you know, that are out fishing. But really the ludicrousy of this like kind of situation is not in the fact that, you know, Jesus just stepped into their boat. In order to understand how crazy and how maybe audacious this would have seemed or ridiculous this would have felt, you have to understand how fishing took place in ancient Israel. So I'm going to kind of give you some context, okay? Because the Sea of Galilee is not really a sea. It's a lake, okay? It's a lake in Israel. Israel, if you don't know, is in the Middle East. And if you don't know anything about the Middle East, just know that it's hot. Like, it's hot all the time. And Galilee, that region, is extremely hot. And so because of the heat, fishing during the day doesn't really make sense. Not just for the fishermen, but more importantly, for the fish that they want to catch. Because during the heat of the day, the fish actually move down to the bottom of the lake where the water temperatures are cooler. And then in evening when the sun has set and the water temperatures cool off near the top, they surface to feed. So fishermen going out to fish would take their nets because they're not fishing with lines. They're fishing with nets, and they would fish all night long. And they would drag their nets across the surface of the lake and then bring their catch back to shore first thing in the morning. And then at morning time, they would sell, trade, barter, do what they needed to do to make ends meet and, you know, sell off what they caught the night before. So when Jesus says, hey, it's the middle of the day, I'm doing some teaching. Hey, now that you've done, finished, go ahead and jump back in your boat and push out and go a little bit deeper and cast your net. Like, this would have made no sense. This would not have been what you're supposed to do. Now, I don't know what Peter's initial reaction was. We see that he just said, okay, if you say so, then I'll do this. But I'm thinking, if I'm Peter, I'm like, bro, I'm the fisherman here. Like, I just did this all night long. Did you not just see, I just cleaned my nets. I just took care of everything. I just shut down the shop because we didn't catch anything. And Jesus, I know you do cool things. I know you teach and people listen. But if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure you're a carpenter. Like, I'm the professional in this situation. You can heal, you can turn water into wine, you can do a lot of cool things, but I catch fish. And this is what I know. This is what I do. And yet, in Peter's situation, I imagine that probably to a degree, he was just like, okay, I'll do this, but really, this is gonna be a waste of time. This is gonna be a waste of time. I've worked hard all night long. I've been out there already, Jesus. I cleaned everything up, and now, it's time to step back out into the water. It's time to go back into the lake, go back into my boat, push out into the lake, and do the exact same thing that I just did during prime time and do it during downtime and expect a different result. It just doesn't make sense. And I think this is where it gets personal, because as much as maybe you felt frustrated in work, as much as maybe you felt frustrated in your career, as much as maybe you felt frustrated or like you wasted time in a relationship, my guess is that there's some people in this room or some people listening online who have felt like they've wasted time in their faith and in their relationship with Jesus. You feel like you've been doing the things that Jesus told you to do. You feel like you've been at it for a while and nothing seems to be happening. You feel like you've been walking with Jesus, yet you don't feel like you've taken any steps forward. You feel like you've trusted Jesus and you followed Jesus, yet you find yourself constantly or continuously disappointed in the way things are. Maybe you feel like you've continued to relate or to connect or to press into what God wants for you, and you keep doing the same things. I keep going to church. I keep serving. I keep giving. I keep making connections. I keep being kind. I keep loving people. I keep sacrificing. And yet I'm doing all of these same things over and over and over. But for what, Jesus? For what? What is it that's supposed to change? What is it that's supposed to be different? What is it that, you know, is all of a sudden just gonna do this? Maybe it wouldn't surprise me if there's someone here who you grew up in a Christian household and you've done this quote Christian thing your whole life, hoping that one day, someday, finally, somehow it would all just click and somewhere it would make sense. And yet you're 20, 30, 40 years into it and you're like, I don't know if it's ever gonna click. I don't know if it's ever gonna make sense. And yet Jesus is asking you to do it and you're like, why? For what? I've been doing this all night. Forget all night. I've been doing this my whole life, Jesus. I've been at this for a while and it's left you feeling like this whole Jesus thing is quite frankly, or just kind of bluntly, been a waste of time in a lot of ways. And that's a discouraging feeling. You feel like you've done your best through it all. You know, in the good times, you're like, I'm with you, Jesus. And when things have gotten bad, you're like, I'm trying to ride it out with you, Jesus. And then things get better, and you're like, okay, this is great. But then things get worse, and you're like, God, where are you? Or God, I'm trying, I'm sticking this out. But the longer you journey, the more you do it, the more he tells you to stick at it, the more he tells you to do it again, the more he tells you to push out one more time, you're just like, I can't do this any longer. I don't know how much longer I can hold on because nothing seems to be changing. And if you've ever felt that way before, if you've ever experienced that, if you're willing to be honest with yourself and say, yes, I've been there. Yes, I'm here. I'm in that moment or in that space right now. Then I've got good news because I came to deliver some hope today. I came to share some good news today. I came to tell you that you've not wasted time, but you've invested time into something good, into something that's going to bless you and something that's going to reward you in time. But before I can prove it to you, I actually have to ask you some questions. And these questions are intended to bring some clarity. And that clarity that comes from that will lead to confidence in your life. And when we have confidence, you know what it breeds in us? Is conviction that we're not going to move from that place. Because if I know what I'm supposed to do, No one's going to talk me out of it. And if I know what I'm supposed to become, then nothing's going to shake me from it. And it doesn't matter what pushes against me. It doesn't matter what I've got to repeat. It doesn't matter what tries to topple me over. I'm going to stand my ground and I'm going to believe in faith that this is what God has called me to do and that it's not wasting time. It's investing time in something significant and meaningful for my life. So if you're okay with that, I'll share the questions. Here we go. Question number one. What are you fishing for? What are you fishing for? You see, these guys, Peter, James, and John, they weren't just out there like drinking a couple beers and hanging out recreational. I mean, they might have been drinking, but this wasn't just like recreational fishing. This wasn't just like, oh, let's go, you know, kill some time and throw out a line and see if we get any bites. They were fishing for their livelihood. They were fishing for their fulfillment. They were fishing for their jobs. They were fishing for their families. They were fishing for something that would provide something more meaningful or significant for their sons and daughters that would come after them. This wasn't just, let's go hang out. We got bored all night. And so we went out on a boat and decided to catch a couple fish because we had nothing better to do at 2 a.m. in the morning on a Tuesday night. This was their lives. This was their hopes. This was everyone else that I know is depending on me to do this thing. It was survival and it was about provision. So when they came back to the shore empty-handed, and they came back to the crowds who were ready to buy, to sell, to trade, to barter, and they had nothing to show for it, it was an indictment on their skill. It was an indictment on their ability. It was an indictment potentially on their character. And there were consequences to be paid. There was the shame and the regret of coming back and saying, I've got nothing for you. I worked hard all night. And I've got nothing to show for it. And see, I think each of us is fishing for something in our lives. Each of us is fishing maybe for several somethings. We're fishing and we're hoping. We're dreaming for that family. We're dreaming for that relationship. We're dreaming for that job. We're dreaming for that career outcome. We're dreaming for that situation where life can just kind of coast and be simple or be, you know, at least not stressful and move things forward. And so we're fishing for something. We're throwing it out there and saying, God, what is it that you're dreaming for? And so I'm asking you today, what is it that you're fishing for? What is it that you're throwing your nets out there hoping you catch? What is it that you're asking God? God, this is what I long for. This is what I'm hoping for. This is what I'm believing for. This is who's counting on me. This is what's depending upon this. God, this is what I'm fishing for. I need to catch this thing. What is it that you're fishing for? Second question, why are you ready to give up? You remember back that the disciples were washing their nets. They were calling it quits. They're wrapping up for the day. Business struggled, so it's time to just shut it down and, you know, take your losses and move on to the next day. And they were quitting, and they had reasons to. It wasn't like it was invalid. Why fish during the day if we didn't catch anything at night? Why continue in this way if something isn't working? Why stay out here in the heat of the sun knowing we're not going to catch anything and we're only going to get sunburned? You see, I think a lot of times, and I'm not going to use this point as a let me beat you up, because I think a lot of times we all have very valid reasons for why we're ready to give up. We've been let down. People have hurt us. We're tired of auditioning and not getting the gig. We're tired of applying and not being interviewed. We're tired of asking, hey, would you want to go out with me, and then being ghosted. We're tired of kind of taking these steps and saying, okay, I've been going to church, or I've been doing this thing. I've been following Jesus. And so Jesus, I've done everything, yet it doesn't seem like it's turning around. And your failures or your experiences or your relationships or those situations, those are very real. And so this isn't about like, oh, you're a loser. You're about to quit. This is about, man, I'm tired because I don't know that I could keep going in this way or face another rejection or face another disappointment or face another hurt. And so God, my reasons are reasons. They're not excuses. These are valid experiences that I have. But if that's the case, then let me just ask kind of another question. And it's not the next question in line as much as it's a question tied to this. Could it be that you are on the brink of experiencing what you actually are supposed to experience? And if you were to quit now, you would actually miss out on that thing. Could it be that you're like, oh, I don't know why I'm here. I was brought to this city and I have no idea why. And I'm stuck in this situation and I'm just ready to kind of drop it all and move somewhere else. Could it be that maybe it's time to move somewhere else? I don't know, but maybe God has you in this situation. And if you just hang on a little bit longer, if you go at it one more time, if you're willing to do it, and again, if you're willing to just kind of push out a little bit further, you could be on the cusp of receiving or inheriting the very blessing you've been fishing for your entire life. Wow. That's good. Which leads to this third question. How deep are you willing to go? You see, they were ready to quit. They're ready to pack it up, go home, tails between their legs, the embarrassment, the shame, the regret, the failure, the disappointment. And that's when Jesus stepped in and asked them to do the unthinkable. Get back in your boat, push out further, go deeper. How deep are you willing to go? You see, they had to push out further than they were before, and they had to go to a deeper section of the lake than they were before. You see, I think there's this metaphor here where Jesus wants to take you a little bit deeper than you're willing to go on your own. He wants to take you a little bit further than you'd be willing to go on your own. Because what he wants to draw out of you isn't something that's reached on the shallows of life. What he wants to produce in you is cultivated in the depths of your soul and in your spirit. And he has to push you out further. He has to invite you out deeper. And you have to be willing to go there to say, okay, Jesus, I don't know how deep this water is, but surely if you're calling me into the deep, it's because you're drawing something from deep within me that I don't see or I don't have just yet.
Right, that's good.
And so he invites you to go further. He invites you to go deeper. And I love it because, listen, it says Peter, he said, hey, Peter, push me into the boat. But when he invited Peter into the boat, he said, you push out further. In other words, how deep are you willing to go, Peter? Because he's not going to force you into the deep. If you don't want it, he's not going to make you go there. But if you're willing to say, God, I'll go where you want me to go. I'll be with you wherever you want me to be. I'll step out of the boat, or I'll step into the boat, or I'll move out further than I was, or I'll go deeper than I've been. God, if that's what you're asking, that's what I'm going to do. And I love Peter's response because it's this. Peter's response is these letters right here, kind of an acronym. If you say so, I will. Verse 5, he said, God, we've been fishing all night long. But if you say so, I will. If you say so, I'll push out again. If you say so, I'll go deeper. You know, my circumstances aren't what I want them to be, but if you say so, God, I will. My situation is not what I envision, but if you say so, I will. This isn't the dream that I had, but if you say to do it again, I will. This isn't where I envisioned my life to be. I never thought I'd live here. I never thought I'd move away. But if you say so, God, I will. I didn't know that I'd be sticking it out this long in this relationship or in this work situation. But if you say so, God, I will. God, whatever it is that you say, that's what I will do. Just as Peter said, Master, we've been fishing all night long. But if you say so, I will. Peter may not have liked it. Peter may not have understood it. Peter may not have wanted it, but all it took was saying, if you say so, I will. And I wonder today, how many of us have heard Jesus speak about something and either intentionally or unintentionally have said, I can't, or I won't. I'm with you, Jesus, in the good. I'm with you when things are great, but man, this is too much. Man, this is too long. Man, this is too difficult. And so I can't or I won't. But what if? The response was, if you say so, I will. In Peter's case and in James and John, it changed everything. Going back to the story starting in verse 6, it says, in this time, so he lets the nets down. In this time, their nets were so full of fish that they began to tear. A shout for help brought their partners in the other boat, and soon both boats were filled with fish on the verge of sinking. When Simon Peter realized what had happened, he fell to his knees before Jesus and said, oh Lord, please leave me, for I am too much of a sinner to be around you. For he was awestruck by the number of fish they had caught, as were the others with him. His partners, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, were also amazed. And Jesus replied to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will be fishing for people." And as soon as they landed, they left everything and followed Jesus. You see, the blessing that Peter experienced, the blessing that James and John were a part of, was far beyond their comprehension. It was far beyond their ability to understand how they can toil all night long and not get anything. And then Jesus says, "Hey, go out a little bit further." And they bring their nets, and it's too much to carry. In fact, their boat started to sink because of how much they had. Have you ever been overwhelmed by a blessing of God? Like wrecked. Like where it's so rich, where it's so good, where you just can't help but be like Peter and kind of fall to your knees and say, "God, I'm not even worthy of this. I'm not deserving of this. God, this doesn't make sense." This is where they found themselves. You know, I was reminded that 6 years ago, this week, 6 years ago is when my life literally started to fall apart. My marriage imploded due to addiction, deception, lying, and just all this kind of tension that surfaced within my marriage. And things just started crumbling, like incredibly fast. And for months, we just kind of stuck it out trying to make things work, but nothing got better. Nothing was improving, nothing was going anywhere, nothing was changing. And Chris and I were barely even talking to each other, let alone, you know, making progress. And for months I would pray, like, "God, why? Like, why me? Why did I do this? Why would I cause this kind of pain? Why would, you know, this situation take place? Why is nothing working? Why is nothing happening?" And like 7 months later, we end up packing up and moving from New York to South Carolina. And all of a sudden, you know, we're there and the circumstances surrounding our situation were a lot better or gave room for improvement. But for the first few months, nothing was making progress. Things weren't accelerating. Things weren't getting better. And so we're 10 months into this thing. And I keep asking God, like, when at some point, like, when does this get better? And it's just like, just stick at it. Just keep doing the same things. Just keep focusing on this. And nothing is changing. And so I'm like, God, why? And the number of times that I wanted to quit, the number of times that I wanted to just give up and feel like, man, this is just a lost cause. Like, I'm not making things better. I'm the source of the problem. And so my presence, my involvement is only making things worse. And all of a sudden at the start of 2015, things like flipped. Things flipped in our relationship. Things flipped in our family. Things flipped in our marriage. Things flipped in our lifestyle. And all of a sudden, all these like ridiculous blessings just started pouring in. Financial blessings, relational blessings, positional blessings. All of these things just started flooding our lives. And I found myself for months asking God the same question, why? Why, God, I don't deserve these things. I didn't earn these things. I'm not good enough for this. Like surely someone else has been more faithful. Surely someone else has been more committed. Surely someone else has been more resolved to walk the path that is right and doesn't harm people or doesn't hurt people. God, that's not been me. Like, why am I being overwhelmed by these good things? And I would pray, literally, I would get on my knees and I would pray and I would just say, God, like, I don't deserve these things. And after months of praying, probably 3-4 months, the Holy Spirit just spoke in a moment. And he said, "Ricky, because you were willing. It's not because you were more faithful. It's not because you were better than anyone else. It's not because you were good. It's not because you did all these things right. It's not because you did all these things wrong. It was simply because you said, 'If you say so, God, I will.'" And 2015 became this year of ridiculous, like astronomical blessing and restoration in my family, in my marriage, in my life. And that resolve and that understanding came when I realized, listen, if I just commit to what Jesus has to say, if I just do what he wants me to do, if I just say, "Hey, Jesus, I'm with you in the good. And yes, I'm with you in the bad, for better, for worse. It doesn't matter what I go through. It doesn't matter what levels or what degrees, but if I just stick it out with you, if I just do what you've told me to do, even if it feels redundant, even if it feels repetitive, even if it seems foolish, even if it goes contrary to what public opinion or what the norm is. If I just do what you tell me to do, then I can count on the fact that blessing, an overwhelming blessing, is on the horizon and I'm on the brink of experiencing something. It's not wasted time, it's invested time. It's not a loss, it's a gain. And the question that I'll leave you with is not a question that'll be up on the screen, but it's a question simply of the heart. What would your life look like if every time Jesus called you into something, you simply responded, "If you say so, I will"? You see, because I think as we all know, or as most of us understand, Peter, James, and John would move from being around Jesus and knowing of Jesus in this moment, leaving everything behind and saying, "I'm going to be with you, Jesus." And Jesus declared, "You're no longer going to fish for fish. You're going to fish for people." And their reward was that they were at the forefront of a global movement that has literally shaped and changed the world that you and I live in today. All because they said, "If you say so, I will." So what would your world look like? What would your life look like if you simply responded, "God, whatever you say, I will. Wherever you go, I'll go. And wherever you lead, I'll follow, because I just want to be with you." Let me pray for us.
Hey, thanks for listening to this week's podcast. We hope it encourages you in your faith and blesses you throughout the week. If you'd like to find out more about Meta Church, you can find us online at meta.church. And we hope to see you again next week on the podcast.